Isaiah 55. This is God from Isaiah appealing to the exiles to return from Babylon and for those who had returned to get on with the work of rebuilding the temple and restoring his kingdom. And he's urging them that every resource is behind you. My will is behind you. I will provide the resources. So verse 1, come everyone who thirsts to the waters, come he who has no money, buy and eat. Yes, come buy wine and milk without money and without price. Now that little phrase, without price, you find this in Isaiah 45, when we're told that Cyrus let the people go from exile without price. He told them, so King Cyrus said, look, you Jews who are in exile, you can return, go back to your land, rebuild your temple and your capital city, and I will fund it. I will give you all the resources you want. You can take back the gold and silver vessels that were taken here into captivity, take them back. I'll give you timber from Lebanon. I'll give you grants to whatever you want. I'll give you absolutely what you need. Go and do it. It was amazing. And yet the vast majority of the exiles preferred to remain in exile. So, it was tragic that what was possible didn't happen. And so, these prophecies about the restoration are reapplied to us. Jesus begins his manifesto in the Sermon on the Mount by saying, whoever hungers and thirsts for righteousness is going to be filled. And this is it. Come, everyone who thirsts to the waters, come. Don't worry. You don't need money. You don't need resources. I will provide. This is all free. We wonder why there is this emphasis on you don't need money. It's all going to be provided. Well, of course, it was provided by Cyrus. But I think the real reason why most of them remained in captivity, or let's say in exile, was because they were actually doing very well there. This is the sad ending, in my opinion, of the book of Esther, that the Jews in Persia are wealthy. They are popular. People like them. You can see how wealthy they were even before all that thing happened with Haman, because he offers the king a huge amount of money. If you will let me liquidate the Jews. He clearly calculated their wealth very, very high. It's been complained by some of the miserable critics that the amount of money that Haman offers to pay into the king's treasury was way beyond actually what was probably in the treasury anyway. It was a massive amount of money. And he clearly intended to get that by eliminating all the Jews and expropriating their wealth and property. As we know, there was people like Esther, Mordecai, etc., who were high up within the royal palace in Shushan. So I think the reason a lot of them didn't go back was because actually they were doing very well for themselves. And so here they're being invited and asked to radically reevaluate everything in their lives. Verse 2, in the NEV, why do you spend money for that which is not bread? Septuagint, I think, gets it better. Wherefore do you value at the price of money? He's calling them to a radical revaluation of life. Stop looking at everything in terms of money. Now, the few exiles who did return, relatively few, had the wrong attitude. They came back to the land, or let's say emigrated to the land, because they were thinking of what they could get for themselves. That, hey, we could get some farmland, have good harvests, and have some land for ourselves and build a nice house on it. And that's why Haggai says, why are you living in your sealed paneled houses while my house lies in ruins? That's why God says, you've come back to the land, but I'll send a famine on you. You're going to be in the position of a man who earns wages, puts his money in his pocket, but he's got holes in his pocket and the money falls out and he loses it. And life's all a bit of a, you know, labor in vain. Yeah, because their whole attitude was, what's in it for me? They were obsessed with materialism, and that is why they did not respond to the call to restore the kingdom. It says again in verse 2, Having said this in the Septuagint, why do you value at the price of money and your labour for that which does not satisfy? In the next chapter, in Isaiah 56, they're called greedy dogs who cannot be satisfied. They were greedy, they were obsessed with personal gain, and if that's how you are, you will never be satisfied. And God says, look, listen diligently to me, verse 2, and eat what is good, and let your soul delight itself in fat things. These are the fat things of the messianic banquet that could have been experienced in Zion had they returned. And God offers them in verse 3 a new covenant. Turn your ear, come to me, and I will make an everlasting covenant with you, even the sure mercies of David. Now, the sure mercies of David, the mercy shown to David was grace, because he should have died for what he did with Bathsheba, but God forgave him. And God is saying here, look, I'll give you a new covenant. This is exactly what you've got in Ezekiel 20 and in Jeremiah repeatedly, that if they had returned, God would have given them a new covenant. They'd broken the old covenant. That was broken, and they were suffering the results of the curses for breaking the covenant by being in exile. And so God offered them a new deal, a new covenant. But they didn't want that either. They wanted to carry on trying to keep the old one as far as they could. And so he's saying to them, look, don't be so obsessed with material things. If you want to say yes to me, if you want to go and rebuild my kingdom, do the work of my kingdom, I'll provide you with all the resources you need. And if you really thirst for me, I will fill you, and it will be without money and without price. Now, as I say, they didn't want this in the end, and so these words are reapplied in the New Testament to us. This verse 1 clearly in the Lord's words in John 7, if any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. And so we have, though, the same tendency to be so obsessed with the material, with financial issues, with greed, with seeking our personal satisfaction through our own labour, that we effectively say no to the call of the gospel. Why do people turn down the call of the gospel? Well, I think that it's simplistic to say, oh, because they don't understand it, or because they somehow intellectually didn't put all the verses of the Bible together to see the truth. I think there is a deeper reason, a deeper subconscious psychological reason. And it's simply this, that to say yes to the things of God, to the things of God's kingdom, means de facto resigning the things of your little kingdom. And who wants to do that? People don't want to do that. To come to him and eat and drink without price and without money, and to radically revalue everything, and don't value, as verse 2 says in the Septuagint, don't value things at the price of money. Well, that is a call that is too radical for most people. We live in an age of the commodification of everything. That is what capitalism has done. It's, of course, the way of human nature to put a price tag on everything, to turn everything into a commodity. And yet the call here is, why do you value at the price of money this wonderful hope, this wonderful experience now of working in the things of God's kingdom is beyond any valuation. And in any sense, you don't need wealth and money to be happy. People will say, oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I agree with you. But no, yeah. In reality, people think that you do need wealth and money to be happy, and you don't. This is the biggest myth of all. So it was a tragedy that people didn't want to respond. And the reason that's really implied here is that they were greedy. They wanted to simply delight themselves in their own material wealth and their own things of the kingdom of Persia or Babylon, rather than the things of God's kingdom. And yet God says in verse 11 that The word that has gone forth out of my mouth will not return to me void, but it will accomplish that which I please, and it will prosper in the thing I sent it to do. Well, the context is that just as the rain comes down from the sky, doesn't return, but produces fruit and gives seed and bread to people on earth, so God's word is going to have its effect. The word that is in view here is the word of restoration, that I will restore my kingdom. Even though, in the context of Isaiah 55, the Jews in exile and those who had returned were not willing really to respond. It will prosper. It will eventually come true in people like you and me, who hear this call to come out of Babylon, which is out of the prophets there, flee from Babylon, go back to the land. That's all applied to us in the New Testament. 2 Corinthians, Revelation, that's applied to us. We are to leave all this stuff, to quit all this stuff, and God will prosper our way. So then, it depends whether you really believe the good news of God's kingdom. There is a critical difference between knowing facts about God's kingdom and actually believing this as personal good news for me. Because if you do, then you will give your soul for this. And it is mythical to think that, oh yes, well, I can only do God's work if I have resources. I get so many messages on social media and communications from folks in poorer countries. Oh, I'd love to serve God, but I need this money. No, you don't. This is the whole thing, that God will do this. If you really want to serve God, really from all your heart, that this is your passion, the things of his kingdom, he will provide. Not for you, not necessarily give you smart life, but he'll provide the resources one way or the other to do his work, if that is what with all your heart you want to do.